This is a podcast for Wednesday, October 23rd, 2013, Ethics. So today we're talking about egoism some more, and we're talking about the philosophy of Ayn Rand, who is a major proponent of egoism. Rand's book, The Fountainhead, and then her even bigger bestseller, Atlas Shrugged, have had almost more influence than any other book written in the English language in the 20th century. Very influential. There's lots of interesting people who were influenced by Rand. Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. Eric Drexler, the main pioneer of nanotechnology. And lots of other famous. John Allison, a famous business guy. And countless other people. And even if they don't agree with Rand point by point, she's had a huge influence on all kinds of people. Judge Clarence Thomas, Steve Forbes, former presidential candidate, and the guy that runs Forbes magazine. So just a huge influence on the way people think about the self, about morality, and about free market capitalism. So Rand's philosophy is known as objectivism. It includes egoism as part of it, of the philosophy. Rand's also really the one of the main founding mothers of the modern libertarian movement. There were some people. I mean, you can point to people throughout history like Adam Smith and David Hume and some economists like Menger and Mises. But really, if you look at what libertarianism is. You can point to just a few people, and Rand is one of those primary people, and many people identify her as the main person behind the libertarian movement as we see it today. Rand hated libertarians. She called them hippies of the right, and mainly because she thought they had misappropriated her ideas, wrenched them out of their philosophical context, and sort of the idea was they stole her political beliefs without or political ideas without attribution, and wrench them apart from their foundational ethics and metaphysics and epistemology. And she's a philosopher, so that really bothered her. I think if you looked at the libertarian political system, pretty much down the line, Rand would go along with it. It's just that she had a problem with the Libertarian Party and the libertarian and people who call themselves libertarian because she regarded them as plagiarists. And for her, because she's an egoist, the intellectual property is very important. So her metaphysics was one of objective reality. So the idea that there's a mind-independent reality. Philosophical naturalism is the idea that the natural world is all there is. There's no supernatural. There's just, matter in motion, atoms in the void, physical stuff. There's no spiritual stuff. There's no God or occult forces that run the world. It's just what's observable. And how do you find out about the world? Well, through using your senses and augmentation of the senses, and the use of your reason, which means the scientific method. So reason and the senses are the only guide to truth. Not revelation, not faith, not your feelings, but using your mind and your senses to discover the truth about the world. Her ethics, and this is what we're going to focus on here, egoism. But really, egoism should be seen as a rejection of altruism. So altruism is a view of Auguste Comte, and his idea of altruism is sacrificing yourself for the good of society. And Rand thought that was one of the most pernicious ideas in the history of human civilization. She thought that it largely came from a religious motivation. She described altruism as a demon which haunts Western culture. So her idea is that altruism sort of came out of Christianity and this whole idea of sacrificing yourself and that suffering is good and that suffering, earthly suffering is going to bring you heavenly reward and you're blessed if you're being persecuted and maligned, and it's good for you to suffer, those sorts of things. And this kind of life denial, and that this world that we live in is only a temporary thing, and thus it's despised and devalued because it's nothing in comparison with this supposed future afterlife we're all going to. And she thought that those were just terrible ideas that rob people of the natural joys and pleasures of living in this world, of achieving, of creating, and of, you know, and being happy. The idea of putting off happiness for some future world, which she says basically there's no evidence for and doesn't exist. Her politics are sort of a corollary of this, so all these things fit together in a neat little package. Her politics, free market capitalism, not crony capitalism, and as I like to say, crony capitalism is phony capitalism. Crony capitalism is better called crony socialism because it means that the state and businesses are colluding to screw you, the consumer. And so whether it's George Bush and big oil, or whether it's President Obama and green energy boondoggles, the game is the same regardless of what party is in charge. And what happens is that basically businesses collude with government, they get regulations passed that that screw their competitors, they get big subsidies at taxpayer expense, and they get tax breaks, so they have all these favors, and they peddle influence in Washington. And it's very different from a system of free exchange where consumer demand determines what things cost, what things are made, and there aren't any subsidies. And so, under free market capitalism, there's no too big to fail. There's no monopoly because monopoly is a government granted institution. Government grants monopolies. There's so-called natural monopolies, but they never last for very long. And where they exist, it's because one competitor is just their product and service is just so superior to everybody else's that it's because they're popular that they're the biggest one or they're the only game in town. And you can see this with the iPhone, right? When it came out, it was the only game in town, and the tablets. But then after that, where'd you get Samsung, you get Android, and when there's a market, other people come in and compete. When you have government control, competition is stifled. So anyway, if you look at capitalism, it's sort of it's a natural extension of the idea of life, liberty, and property. You're the one who decide how much you work for, how much you're willing to take as an employee, how much you're willing to give in wages as an employer, how are you going to run your business, who you're going to trade with, on what terms, all those things, and you get to keep what you make. Those are all ideas of capitalism, or as I like to call it, free exchange. Totally different from the kind of what we have today in America, which is probably better described as corporatism, but that even that makes it seem like corporations are the evil ones. They use these nice words like public-private partnership, but really it's business, big business, and big government colluding together to screw the little guy. And then her last part, and this sort of is important to her as a writer, is her aesthetics, romanticism, and actually she says romantic realism. So. Her style is all about things that could happen. Her science fiction is very near world. It's not sort of, and she didn't really like fantasy and stories about dragons, and the whole idea of the supernatural really bothered her, so she didn't write stories about that. They were all based on real world situations. So romanticism, and particularly romantic realism. Prolegomena here just means introductory remarks. Yes, sir.
Would she have been against any sort of employer regulations like minimum wage or anything like that, any law like that?
Yeah, she thought minimum wage is a horrible idea. It makes people unemployed. And you look economically, minimum wage drives up the unemployment rate. And that's why in states that have very high minimum wage, you have very high employment rates. Low minimum wage, it tends to be very low. It tends to hit poorer people the most because they're the ones that need the unskilled labor that pays the minimum wage. And largely, minimum wage laws are driven by unions because the minimum wage sets sort of the bottom of the union wage, and any tick up on the minimum wage raises union wages a certain amount. So her idea was that in a system where you let the market work its magic, you get wages go up and prices stay down. And so if you say, and once you start mandating things like benefits, like you tell Walmart you have to pay people $10 an hour and you also have to provide all your employees health insurance. Well, you know, that drives up the prices, and then all the poor people who go to Walmart to buy cheap things because they're not making very much, all of a sudden the price for everything they buy goes up because the company has to stay in business, and, you know, profits are the mother's milk of business and what keep it going. So if a business isn't profitable, it fails and it ceases to exist. And she thought that demonizing profits, too, was another sign of this pernicious influence of altruism, the idea that you should feel bad about doing something for yourself, about success, that if you succeed at something, if you make money, there's something kind of dirty about it. And there's something bad about doing things for yourself, and you should always be thinking about other people. And this kind of perpetual guilt trip the society places on you for enjoying your life or wanting to succeed or wanting to have money is a big problem. And in her view, if people focus on their own interests and stop going around trying to fix society or, you know, engage in political action to try to take other people's stuff, instead they like got a job and started trying to make some money or tried to start their own business instead of trying to reach in somebody else's pocket, the world would be a lot better place. We'll get time for criticism here. So altruism is a great symbol of altruism, right? The blow-up doll. So, you know, this idea of, you know, why is that a symbol of it? It's the idea of an unfeeling, totally selfless being, right? The blow-up doll doesn't enjoy sex. The blow-up doll is a receptacle for another person's pleasure. Its only function in life is to pleasure others. Right, and so that's the idea that the altruist has. You should have no regard for yourself whatsoever. You should always be giving and giving and giving. And when you can't give anymore, you have to give a little more. So the purpose in life for you is for you to serve others. And thinking about yourself is seen as sinful, as bad. You know, you're just selfish if you're thinking about yourself. And what you should think about is society and the greater good. And so, you know, one of the questions I asked in this presentation is, okay, altruism, a morality of self-sacrifice, maybe that's bad, but is egoism what you should replace it with? And that's kind of a question. Maybe something else could go there. In Rand's view, egoism and altruism were sort of two mutually exclusive choices, and that either you believed in a morality of self-sacrifice, or you didn't. If you didn't believe in a morality of self-sacrifice, you believed in a morality of the individual, where the individual is free to pursue his or her own interests and not feel guilty about it and be perfectly entitled to do that. Now, Rand also believed in being a benevolent person, in helping others, but the idea is that you shouldn't make yourself a doormat, but you can be a good citizen. And what's the best way to help other people? Give somebody a job, start a business, invent something, create a work of art, do something positive, and then sell it, and create something, or produce something, have an invention and make it. Make something that other people are willing to exchange money for, and that raises everyone in society. If you just go around looking for people that already have stuff, and you're kind of a parasite or a leech trying to take their stuff and give it to someone that you think deserves it, then you're just making things worse. You're kind of redistributing resources, but you're not adding to the total pool of resources. And when you start to redistribute resources in a way other than the market's distributing them, you're going to cause problems with the market. You're going to depress production. You're going to stifle innovation. And you're going to end up with, you know, something like North Korea or the former Soviet Union or Cuba, or I suppose to a lesser extent, I don't know, like Mexico, yeah, or someplace other than America, where you get the majority of innovations, the majority of tech startups. America has been a bastion of innovation and industrial production and invention and science and so on for a good reason. And it has to do with our sort of history of entrepreneurial capitalism and a real sort of individualist ethic that you see in the writings of the Founding Fathers and trying in our Constitution and so on. Yeah.
What about the people who aren't gifted to create, or people, I've known people who have, I've got this invention and they spend years and years trying to push this invention, no one's buying it, it's like a breakfast maker machine or something like that. What about those people?
Well, if you know, you can patent it, right? So, Rand was not against patents. She held copyrights to her works and zealously guarded them and used the legal system to sue people who are misappropriating them. But it's the idea the government is there to provide a basic infrastructure. Now, if you have a really good invention, you don't have any capital, right? So you have a great idea. So what you should do is patent that and then go from place to place, and there's companies that will help you do this.
But that's the best you could do.
If it's a crappy idea, then why is the world owe you a living?
So then what happens to that person? They don't...
You get a job doing something you're good at. It's like, do I have a right to become a world-famous violinist? Do I have the right to play in Carnegie Hall? No, because I kind of suck as a violin player, because I haven't played in 20 years. Am I entitled to do that? Should you feel sorry for me that they'll never realize my dream? Well, how much should I practice? How much do I practice? Never. It's not, this whole like world owes me a living thing is I think if you think about that, to some extent that should really bother you, that attitude that others have to give you stuff that belongs to them because you deserve it. And that's, you can see a lot of that in Rand's writings, and I think that resonates with most people at a deep level, except for people that are too far gone.
Well, you know. I was reading Burke's speech, and he was talking about there's creators. If you're not a creator, then you're a parasite. Some people are just not creators.
I see what you mean. Well, the idea that to be a creator doesn't necessarily mean you have to be at the top of the pile. Like, there's a character in Atlas Shrugged called Eddie Willers, and Eddie Willers is the faithful companion. He's good at following instructions. He's conscientious. He's a hard worker. He recognizes people of ability and admires them and wants to help them achieve their goals and sort of ride on their coattails instead of trying to grind them into the ground because he's jealous of their success. And he's seen as a good person.
But not a parasite, even though he's trying to ride on their coattails.
Right, because he wants a free exchange. He says, I want to work with you. I admire you. I will work hard for you. I will be faithful and loyal to you. And in exchange, I hope that you'll be faithful and loyal to me, and we'll have this agreement where I know, I expect to be paid what I'm worth, and I want to work with you. That's the kind of, Rand talks about, like, there's in the very beginning of Atlas Shrugged, talks about admiration for everyone that runs a railroad. So the setting on Atlas Shrugged is all about this railroad line. It was written in the late 40s and into the 50s. In the beginning, she talked about how a railroad depends on every person from the manager at the top to the line worker at the bottom, that everybody's important. And I think in the beginning, too, she talks about there's a description of a bus driver, and the bus driver who expertly guides the bus throughout town without running into anything with mechanical precision. And there's an admiration for that. So it's like even the bus driver is a creator if he does what he's able to do, if he's mastered a skill that is valuable to others that are willing to exchange, money for it. But it's the people that don't have any skills, or they have talents but they haven't developed them, and they expect the world to support them. Those are the people that are the parasites.
So even could be a maid.
Right, even a maid, sure. So it's not ability so much. It's attitude, and it's what you've made of yourself. How much you've actualized your own innate potentials that matters to Rand. You've had your hand up for a while, then I'll get to you.
Since Rand hated government intrusion so much, what were her thoughts on the Civil Rights Act?
I'm trying to remember if she had a view on that. She hated racism and was very much against it. I think she was okay with the federal Civil Rights Act with regard to government employment. So if you're the government and you're going to be hiring people, you can't engage in discrimination because government is a public agency. But when you're dealing with a private individual, it's like, do you have the right? You have freedom of association, right? You can decide, and you're a business. You've seen those signs like, we reserve the right to serve, you know, to not serve or not serve any customer, or what have you. It's a business owner's decision as to who they're going to serve. Now, if somebody has a sign that says, you know, no blacks or no Jews or whatever, you know, on their storefront, what are you going to do? Well, instead of trying to pass a law, what you ought to do is get a bunch of your friends together and go picket in front of it and put pressure on that person. And, you know, if you look,
Wouldn't
I think...
that create violence? And that's a fight waiting to happen, it seems.
Not necessarily. Pickets happen all over the place. And it's pretty rare in America that people get hurt. It's a peaceful protest. And what happens when a business is boycotted or picketed? Usually they knuckle under. and sometimes you don't even need a boycott, right? Sometimes it sort of helps, and it's hard to see what might have happened. But, I mean, look at Paul Dean, right? Look what happened to her. she was being held up at gunpoint in a bank by a black guy who put a gun right in her face and robbed her. It was a very traumatic experience. And when she came home and talked to her husband, she used the N-word when describing this very traumatic experience. So 20 years later, there's some lawsuit, and she's under oath, and they asked her, will you ever use that word? And she answered truthfully. And she probably could have lied, right? She could have said, no, I've never used that word. But she related this experience and said that, yes, I used it, I'm ashamed. And just that coming out, it just, like, destroyed her million-dollar food empire.
But the only thing is, it seems like back then, 50 years ago, I mean, they did do that. There were riots and there were protests.
Oh, right, sure.
And nowadays, a business owner would look really, you know, it'd be appalling if they had a sign in their window that said no blacks or no Jews. And no one would accept it. But back then, people did accept it. And so government kind of did have to step in and kind of turn the tide.
Well, the government was sort of a trailing edge. Like, there already were these massive protests. And it's not like the government law, you know, stopped all the protests. The protests spurred political action. But the protests also got, you know, led to changes in attitude, too. So, and I think Rand would say it comes down to private property rights. Does she approve of, say, a club that excludes women? No, or excludes anyone. And she would say, no, but a private organization has the right to decide who's going to patronize it and who isn't. And that would be, and she'd say, I might not agree with it, but it's not my property. And so that would be her view. It's all based on, like, private property rights. Now, she might think that person is a bad person, and she would never patronize a business, and she might even organize a boycott. But there's a difference between peaceful protest and using force. You can only use force against a person if they're using force against you, like a robber or a mugger or a rapist. Society needs to be protected by those people. But you can't go around preemptively telling people who they have to deal with and under what conditions. That was her view. So you had a comment in the back there?
Yeah, I was following up on her conversation. The video that you linked to on Moodle for this week, mm-hmm. when that professor was talking about the Ayn Rand's viewpoint, and she talked very clearly about how it wasn't just inventors, it wasn't just thing, it was people who were maximizing their worth as a person. So mm-hmm. if you could do something that wasn't a creative job or wasn't an inventing job, but if you brought all of yourself that you could to the job to make it as productive and worthwhile as you could, then you were doing the right thing.
You're very well put. Thanks. So you had a comment.
I've seen, like, some of that behavior of segregation with, like, cake shops refusing to make cakes for same-sex couples.
Right.
And then there's the pickets and... similar to how it was with the racism before, is that now?
Right, or Chick-fil-A, right?
Right.
And occasionally you get some Nutter, who takes a gun and goes into the Family Research Council and is going to, like, shoot a bunch of people and smash Chick-fil-A sandwiches all over their corpses. Right, so I mean, there are people who are inspired to violence on any side of an issue. People get unhinged and upset, but people get upset and unhinged at laws that are passed too. So I don't think that just passing laws is going to make people more peaceful. As a matter of fact, it often has the opposite effect. So I think that Rand would say, it's up to the baker who they're going to make a cake for. And if they're, and now Rand was an atheist, and she thought that religious moralists were a big problem, and she opposed the religious right and Jerry Falwell, and was actually very critical of Ronald Reagan. Although she liked his economic policy, she thought that he was too much of a moralist and too much of a person trying to force religion on people, and was very critical of that. So she would, although she would disagree with the baker's religious beliefs, she would say they're entitled to their beliefs, and it's their choice who they're going to serve.
Nadav. Actually,
it sounds odd, but I can see some hidden benefits of allowing bigoted businesses to exist. Maybe if they got that reputation, all of the bigoted people would congregate there and leave me alone, for instance.
There you go, yeah. I mean, there's lots of things, there's businesses too, and you're only picking out like certain things like race, religion, sexual orientation. There are other reasons why people won't serve, businesses don't want to serve other people too, and engage in discriminatory acts. And it's, handicap and all sorts of things. But I, yeah. People with long hair. hippies just get discriminated against and beat up too, but there's no laws against beating up a person because they have long hair or look like a hippie. Think about that movie, Easy Rider, right? That stuff like that went on in the South all the time, where people that look they're part of the counterculture get beat up or even killed by some good old boys, and nobody thought you should pass a law against that. So anyway, for Rand, it comes down to private property, self-determination, and then the way to deal with people that have attitudes you don't agree with is by protest, is by peaceful disagreement, by shunning them, by trying to drive them out of business through peaceful means, by trying to compete with them, not passing a law and using force on them when they're not using force on others. So let's come back to egoism here. And I think I'm going to switch out my batteries. These appear to be dead.